The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, as we've been talking this morning, in fact, we talk every day, I think, about oil from where we broadcast from Texas to Colorado. It's big news. And as I mentioned this morning on the opening, if you take Texas Monthly, which I do, there was a tremendous article. In fact, it was the first thing I read when I picked up my edition of Texas Monthly this month by Lauren Steffi. Lauren is an author, speaker, consultant, and former journalist. He's the author of Drowning in Oil, BP and the Reckless Pursuit of Profit, which, by the way, is really good. I read that. It's great. For 9 years, Mr. Steffi was the business columnist for the Houston Chronicle. And his writing has really been published everywhere. He's appeared on CNBC, Fox, MSNBC, BBC, PBS. And he won in 2012 the Society of American Business Editors and Writers Best of Business Competition. And we are pleased this morning to have Mr. Lauren Steffi with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. Great article, by the way. It was the first thing that I read in my Texas Monthly when I picked it up. It was good. And thank you, by the way, I just got to tell you, thank you, by the way, I was reading the article and you were talking about that dentist, you know, and we've had a lot of shysters in this world, and you're talking about Bill Rousseau, and I can actually remember that guy. And then I thought, is he going to tell me what happened to him? And thank you so much for telling me what happened to him at the end, because you waited a while before you brought it out, but I thought, thank God, at least somebody got their justice. But anyway, you know, oil's on the mind of everyone. And yesterday, you know, the Fed came out. They don't seem to be very, very worried about it. I was talking this morning about Halliburton's president, Jeff Miller, and he was talking in his fourth quarter conference call that usage is going to go up by about 900,000 barrels, that that wells were beginning to play out around the world. What do you see in oil, and how do you see it affecting the economies? We broadcast live. I don't know if Peggy told you, but we are live from Texas into Colorado. And so oil is a big thing where we're talking this morning. What is your take on the oil industry right now?
Well, I think it's, you know, obviously everybody in the business is very concerned. You're starting to see layoffs that are starting to hit not just the service companies who tend to be at the front end of this process, but now we're seeing it start to move into even the larger E&P companies, the drillers. You know, BP just announced some pretty sizable layoffs here in Houston today. So, you know, we're starting to see an impact kind of begin to ripple across the industry. And obviously, if you're in Texas, that's going to have an impact on the economy. It's certainly going to slow the economy. I think all the predictions I've seen are we're still going to have some economic growth, but it's going to be at a much slower rate than what we've seen. Of course, for the rest of the country, it's like Boone Pickens told me when I was working on the article. He said it's bad for the oil business, but outside of Texas, nobody cares about that. And it's kind of true. You know, low oil prices tend to be good for the economy overall. So it could actually be a net positive, but it's going to be really tough if you work in a state that's dependent on oil revenue, like Texas or North Dakota.
Do you see it improving? Because some people are saying it's going to turn around very, very quickly. The futures were at $70 a barrel for January futures, but others are saying no, not so much. It may take a while for it to turn around. Obviously, we're seeing layoffs pretty quickly. The rig count is down. In the past, though, we've had a little bit of both. We've had quick turnarounds and we've had slow turnarounds. Is there anything that would give you an indication it's going to be one way or the other?
Well, you know, one thing about making predictions about the oil market, they almost always turn out to be wrong. When you look historically at what even the best forecasters have said about what they think is going to happen with oil, it's turned out to not be true. So I hesitate to go down that path. But I do think that it's safe to say that over the long term, global demand for energy is only going to continue to increase. We have emerging economies in places like China where they're trying to bring, you know, a billion people out of poverty, and they're going to need energy to do that. And so over the long term, I think that you're going to see demand for energy continue to increase. That's going to certainly shore up prices, and I think eventually it's going to cause perhaps even significant price increases. So what we need to be focused on in the U.S. is not losing sight of the long term here. It's really easy to get giddy about low prices. companies are going to pull back, but we also need to remember that as we move forward, we need to make sure we have the supplies in place secured that we can access so that if we do get into a tight demand situation worldwide, we still have options.
Well, I stay on energy here. You wrote an interesting article about what Obama should have said about the Keystone Pipeline. And, of course, that's been a political football for quite some time. Two things about the article I wanted to ask you about. First of all, what should he have said about the Keystone Pipeline and the infrastructure? And then also about solar energy. It appears that I was surprised. I didn't realize it until I read your article how cheap solar has gotten. And will alternative forms of energy, you mentioned Boone Pickens a few minutes ago, and, you know, there's a guy, he spent about $1 billion trying to get wind energy going, and that didn't work out. So are alternative forms of energy really going to be viable? But let's talk about the pipeline first of all. You think it's going to get passed, and is it just a political football?
Well, it's really sort of devolved to the point of being a political football at this point. What I found frustrating about the Keystone situation was we're talking about one permit in a very lengthy process, and that's the federal permit to allow it to cross the border. And I guess, you know, if you're an environmentalist, you gotta stake your claim where you think you can launch the biggest protest. But the problem with this is that by the time they get the whole thing permitted and ready to go, the market may not be there for the pipeline at all. I mean, I think in many ways it's that we may already be at that point. What I find frustrating about it is that in the State of the Union speech, Obama talked about infrastructure, and, you know, energy infrastructure is an important part of that. If you look at one of the ways we responded to the Arab oil embargoes of the 1970s, was, you know, by producing more oil in Alaska, which relied on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It was a major piece of infrastructure. And so, you know, the Keystone Pipeline is much the same way. It's kind of an insurance policy, again, for a future in which energy becomes more scarce. It gives us access to huge and relatively inexpensive reserves in Canada. So it's something we ought to have in place, even if we don't need it now. It's the kind of thing we'll probably need in the future.
I agree. What about alternative energy? Is solar going to be a bigger factor? As I said, I was very, very enlightened by your comments in your article that there's been a rise in annual rate of, 52% since 2008, and the cost of manufacturing has fallen to 65 cents a watt from $3.95. That's huge, and apparently from, I think you indicated in the article that cheaper energy costs would actually probably bring that down a little further.
Yeah, I think that's one of the great ironies of solar is, you know, you need energy to produce these solar panels, and they're not using solar power to produce solar panels. They're using, in most cases, natural gas. That's what tends to drive, manufacturing fuel, if you will, to power the plants and whatnot. Electricity is generated either with natural gas or coal in most cases. So you still need the fossil fuels in order to be able to make the solar panels more efficient, to bring their costs down so that people can afford to have them. But that's been happening, and there's been a lot of progress in solar. And one of the things that I really hope as a country we take away from this cycle is that we don't allow ourselves to backslide on progress we've made on alternative fuels, because you are starting to see a lot of gains. Solar in particular, what they call distributed solar, people putting it on their rooftops, has really started to gain hold. And part of that is because of the cost. Part of it is because installers have more financial options to help people burden the expense of installing them. But you start to see a lot of utilities that are now rethinking so that they can build their models around this.
Laura, if you just hang on for just a moment, I have a few more questions to ask, if you don't mind, and we'll just carry over to the next segment. Folks, we've got Laura Steffi with us today. Stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. We're back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today Laura Steffi. Laura is author, speaker, consultant, a former journalist. He's the author of a really good book. And in fact, I'm going to ask him about this, called Drowning in Oil, BP and the Reckless Pursuit of Profit. And we are very pleased to have him with us this morning. And Lauren, in fact, I think I'll start there. That was a really good book. I read the book, but let's tell the folks, what's your take on what BP did? I mean, obviously they were they were guilty of a lot of oversight. And in fact, I think they were just reckless. Have they improved? I mean, are we, you know, drilling in the Gulf is really important to our nation's economy. Is any changes you think need to be made, or was that just limited to BP and the way they did business?
Well, I think the answer to the question is both. I mean, there were clearly issues within BP, primarily around its culture, that allowed this to happen in the way that it did. You know, there were serious warning signs that occurred months before the accident that BP didn't heed.
Right.
And so that led to the accident in this specific case. But I think it also brought to light issues that the industry ought to be doing better. And I've talked to a lot of people today about different things that we can do in terms of accident prevention, you know, process safety and things. For example, better use of real-time data. You know, most of these companies collect well data as it's occurring, but they don't necessarily monitor it in real time, so they oftentimes don't see warning signs that could prevent a serious accident. So there's things like that can be done better. But, you know, one of the points I always make when I talk about the book, and people ask me, you know, well, are we going to, especially during the moratorium, they would ask, you know, well, are we ever going to see drilling in the Gulf again? And, you know, again, getting back to this issue that the demand for energy worldwide is only going to continue to grow, we have to have drilling in the Gulf. We're going to have to have drilling on the eastern coast of the United States. You know, if you want to keep driving, we're going to have to keep drilling. It's pretty much as simple as that. So yes, it's an important part, again, of that energy security picture we talked about that needs to go forward. But there are things we can do to do it better and do it more safely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, even as oil falls now, and we've had this pullback in oil, demand literally goes up every single day because we've got 81 new million souls on the planet each and every year. And so, Lawrence, right, it absolutely goes up every single day. Well, we've talked about oil. Oil is a big part of the economy of Texas and Colorado, where we broadcast. I'm beginning to think that both states should probably look for kind of their own little miniature recession to I don't know if it'll be recession or just a pullback, but things have got to be slowing down in those two states. Both of them have been really critical into adding new jobs. What is your overall take of the health of the economies in the Southwest?
Well, I think that overall the economies remain in relatively good shape. Obviously, Texas in particular, very dependent on oil and gas revenues. Oil was, you know, energy accounted for about 14% of the state's GDP, you know, as recently as 2 years ago. So it's a significant factor. But one thing that's changed since the 80s is we have diversified the economy a lot more. So the economists I talked to said, you know, we've had economic growth of around 5% or so, and we may see that pull back to like 2%, but we're still going to have economic growth. So a lot of this, a lot of the pain the economic pain from the lower oil prices really is going to be concentrated in the oil and gas industry. Obviously that can ripple out into, you know, public finance. A lot of states, counties, are relying on oil revenue for their budgets. So, hopefully, you know, the legislature's in session right now in Austin, and hopefully they'll be prudent and take that into account as they plan ahead. But, you know, you can't expect too much out of those guys, I guess. So.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think about the change of leadership now? Perry's out. You know, he was in there for a long, long time. You've got Greg Abbott in. You've got Dan Patrick. What do you think about any surprises you think we're going to get out of Austin?
I'd be surprised if we see a lot of surprises. I mean, I don't cover politics, so I don't know that I want to go too far into this. But I don't think, in terms of business policy and whatnot, I don't think you're going to see a huge shift there. I mean, it's a changing of the guard, but in some ways, it's more a handing of a baton than it is a radical shift. So I think things will be pretty much as they have been.
I agree. Anything concerning you? You cover business. You cover economics. You know, we don't have any really meaningful inflation almost anywhere. And in fact, we're beginning to hear the word, the D word, deflation. Certain countries like France apparently are already officially in deflation. Is there anything out there on the economic horizon that concerns you?
Well, I don't think we have to worry about things like deflation here in the U.S. We haven't really seen a lot of signs of that. I mean, I think they're talking about it a lot in Europe, and clearly Europe has some bigger problems on that front. You know, we're in an interconnected global economy now, so to the extent that things continue to, you know, go south in Europe, it could begin to affect us here. But I think, you know, what we're seeing overall is a relative strengthening of the economy. I mean, it's been very slow in coming, but we're actually starting to see signs that you know, there's some real traction building here, and I think consumer confidence seems to be rising a little bit. So, you know, the big concern that I would have for the Southwest right now, again, it relates to oil, but the real estate market also could be affected by that. We saw that in the 80s. I don't think we're going to see anything that extreme because the banks have gotten a little smarter about how they lend. But, you know, we are seeing a lot of office buildings that have been built in the last few years, and you have to wonder, you know, are all those going to get leased up? So,
yeah, we could get a little overbuilding, but right now it seems to be okay. So nothing worries you. What about low interest rates or persistent low interest rates? It doesn't even seem like there's a reason for the Fed to even raise rates later on this year.
Well, and I think that's been a, you know, kind of an ongoing frustration is when is the Fed gonna you know, basically get off of this policy that they've been on? And certainly most people thought it was going to happen before now. When that will be is very hard to say, but, you know, obviously at some point, you know, interest rates are going to need to go up. You know, but the dollar's strong right now, so that's generally a positive. I mean, it's not necessarily good if you're an exporter, but it's you know, generally overall for the economy, it's a pretty good thing. So, let's put it this way: I wouldn't say I don't have any worries, but I feel much better about the economy than I did 2 years ago. So,
okay,
that's good.
Well, you're generally optimistic. Well, you sound just about like every other economist that we've read. So you're all kind of consistent out there. So you know what that means? That means we're all going to get surprised one day about something.
Right. Like I said, those predictions are wrong. So.
Yeah, that's right. So should we give out your website, laurensteffi.com?
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah, folks, listen, he's a great writer. If you don't get Texas Monthly, you should. It's a great publication. But go to laurensteffi.com. And you can pick up on what Lauren's up to. Lauren, thank you so much for being with us today and for your comments. We really appreciate it.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.